So Valentine's Day is once again upon us, and Nonproductive will do what we can to help set the mood for you and your loved one on this poorly planned date where you're listening to a podcast with them.
This is the night. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful night.
It's going to be all Disney romance songs
and they call
all hour long on this episode of Nonproductive. No, we're not doing that. That would be terrible. We're going to talk about our favorite and least favorite couples in fiction. I'm Frank. I'm joined in studio by Al, Pete, and Pope. And we've got a list of different power couples from fiction. I have a huge list. Once I started writing, it just flowed. All these old feelings came up, both of love, but for me, mostly hate. Power couples that I dislike that are very popular are the ones I feel most passionate about.
I've definitely felt more positive than negative, actually. Like, I like immediately really? Started getting like the ones I really liked, but the ones I dislike, I really dislike. Like, I'm feeling your ability to talk more about the ones you don't like, but I came up with more. I did.
It's hard to underestimate how much these characters kind of mean something to you.
Yeah.
Especially with my favorite thing is modern workplace comedies. So in these stories, you've got a bunch of people who work together. There's usually some sort of romantic coupling, and one or two of them is it's must-watch TV. And the one I'm going to bring up number one as a couple I loathe is Pam and Jim from The Office.
Oh.
Yeah, Pam and Jim were a really big deal back when The Office was a really big deal. Everybody thought they were cute. I thought they were cute. And then I started rewatching it recently, and they are terrible. Pam was in a relationship when they first started their relationship. And I'm not saying that those are ironclad rules. I'm just saying that there was cheating going on, and Jim did stuff that was flat out sexual harassment in many, many ways. You would get fired for doing some of the things that Jim did. They're both jerks to everybody else in the office. I really dislike Pam and Jim.
Yeah, and I agree that, like, upon first viewing, you like them as a couple. But, you know, in watching that whole show, you realize, like, everybody's actually terrible people and do horrible things.
Yeah, they really rag on that one guy, like, a lot. And for not a lot of reason.
Well, Rann Wilson deserves it. No. On the other hand, a workplace comedy couple that I really do like, Andy and April from Parks and Rec.
I agree.
Oh, you had the same one on your list?
Yeah.
Parks and Rec's, and they're adorable. They are absolutely adorable. They complement each other really well. I recently started watching the series from the beginning. I didn't really see their relationship as it progressed like I would watch it in syndication. But it was cute. It's cute that she has this crush on him. Andy is so lovable. He's like a dog person. He's like a dog turned into a human. And no wonder April loves him. I'm very excited about that couple. They genuinely seem to complement each other very well.
And I think that's the thing. Like, we don't love the relationship. We love those characters. And we want them both to succeed. And it's sort of coincidental they like each other. Like, and because you look at him and he's just like, I mean, he's very different from the way he is in season one. And he eventually becomes this sort of innocent guy that just, like, doesn't really understand how a lot of, like, mean things in the world actually work.
Yeah. I can see that. There is definitely, he was kind of more of a bum in season one. But I do think that their coupling makes sense because April's mean, but it's surface mean.
Yeah.
She's looking for someone who's genuine, and you can't get more genuine than Andy. So for modern workplace comedies, I give the award to Andy and April.
Honorable mention to Ron Swanson and America.
Oh, of course. Yes. That is the unspoken relationship in that show.
That is the true love affair.
I have a negative workplace comedy, actually.
Oh.
I tolerated Scrubs through most of my college life because it was always on.
Yeah.
And I grew to absolutely loathe JD and Elliot as a couple.
If you were going to say JD and Turk, I was going to jump over the table and kill you. But you're
no, they were a great
JD
couple.
And Elliot.
Yeah. JD and Elliot, like, because that show goes out of its way to absolutely prove to you this relationship doesn't work. Like, time and time again, they've said, like, okay, no, this isn't going to work. Here are the reasons why. They'll just never be a couple. It's fine. Like, relationships just sometimes fail, and that's okay. But for whatever reason, especially when towards the show's end, they're like, no, they're meant to be together. Like, no, they're not. You went out. You told me 1,000 times these two people were absolutely stupid.
Love JD and Elliot at first. I love them at first. At the time, I really wanted them to work out. I don't know why. Maybe I projected myself onto JD a little bit. But
yeah,
I will agree with you. They really hammered home this relationship will not work. And then they tacked on the whole, yeah, but we're meant for each other towards the end of that series. Like everything else on American television that runs too long,
yeah.
It felt kind of like, whatever, sure. which I think leans pretty well into, let's go right into modern sitcoms in general, not just workplace sitcoms, but modern sitcoms.
Going into modern sitcom, Ted and Robin are miserable from How I Met Your Mother.
Yes.
Like, should not have been together. It's like they literally had the whole series go, no, this couple doesn't work. They put her together with someone perfect for her. They literally have him have his soulmate, and then they set it on fire in the last episode and laugh at you.
Yeah, wow. That's a pretty accurate description of how I feel about that show.
I never watched it, but from what I could tell, it is a garbage fire of a relationship.
I don't know. I actually liked the way that worked out, but yeah, it had some toxic moments. I think that How I Met Your Mother did have a very positive relationship, though, and I think that was Barney and Quinn.
Actually, yeah,
that lasted for like half a season. Yeah. But if you don't remember, Quinn was the stripper that Barney dated for a while.
Yeah,
and she had probably the sexiest line I've ever heard in a sitcom: "The I worship chaos." She pit Ted and Robin against each other to try and get her rent-controlled apartment. Well, how does that affect anything between us? It doesn't. I just worship chaos.
So, I can see why they would be a good couple.
They were an excellent couple. They were made to be together, and it just didn't work out.
Well, couples that were apparently destined to be together but should not have been. My yardstick for bad relationships that are forced out of our throats by writers: Ross and Rachel from Friends. They are awful. Yeah. They are garbage together. They are terrible. Ross himself is a monster. He's a monster in any modern viewing of this series. The things he does are just disgusting.
He should probably be in prison.
I think, Pete, you at one point said stalkerish.
Yeah, he engaged in a lot of creepy stalkerish behavior, but I feel like people all too often go after Ross because it's easy.
It's very
easy. But Rachel is far from blameless. Rachel treats him like garbage.
Yeah.
She knows he's stalking her, essentially, and uses him as the crutch.
Yeah.
You know, anytime she needs some sort of emotional backup or anything, she'll turn to him and then drop him at the drop of a hat.
You know, a lot has been said about modern sitcoms. If you drop out the laugh track on certain very popular shows about geeks, it's not funny at all. I think if you dropped out the audience cues from an episode of Friends, the aws and stuff, and just showed what Ross and Rachel were doing with each other, people would be mortified. It is a really awkward, awkward show.
I agree.
On the other hand, Cam and Mitchell from Modern Family, I really enjoy them as a couple. I think they're a lot of fun. I think they are really natural. Like, they feel genuine. They feel like a real family. Their struggles with adoption, with raising their daughter and adopting their son, like, it's really interesting, and I really like it.
I actually really like their daughter, too. Like, as the series goes on, and like she becomes really adorable.
Which must be like hitting one out of the park, because you don't know when you get a baby
on a
show whether they're going to have any appeal afterwards. It's a horrible thing to say, but you know what I mean.
It's true. It's very true.
And rounding out our modern sitcoms, I think in many ways, the yardstick of perfect relationships, Homer and Marge.
Oh, absolutely.
Simpsons, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely perfect. Talk about your yin and your yang.
Yeah.
I mean, these two complete each other.
Yeah.
I feel like this has ever been done again, like as appropriate as it was done in The Simpsons. Like, Family Guy kind of gave it a shot for the dumb guy dating the kind of capable and attractive woman. And it was like, it doesn't quite work as well. Like, with this, it's much more believable. Like, he's not stupid and inconsiderate. He's just kind of an idiot and is inconsiderate because of that. But once he realizes he's done anything even remotely wrong,
he'll go to the end of the world to make it up to her.
Yeah.
Simpsons varies a lot depending on which era you're watching, right? And I do have a warm place in my heart for them, so I'm more forgiving of some of the jerk ass things that happen in the show. But overall, the story arc is a loving family and supporting each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about sitcoms a lot to begin with. I think it's important that we bring up the classics. The classic sitcoms that kind of set up the idea of these are stories about love and people and interacting with each other in relationships, as opposed to just a bunch of sketch comedy things that nobody gives a crap about. And I think the most iconic of all of them would be from I Love Lucy. It'd be Lucy and Ricky.
Yeah.
Are we okay with giving this a positive? That's perfect.
Oh, yeah. Because it lacks any of the, like, really kind of almost scary to a certain extent, like, relationship stuff that was going on back in the time, like, say, with the Honeymooners or so on and so forth.
Yeah, all right, sure.
Like, and Lucy and Ricky, like, it felt like they were partners in that marriage. Even though, like, Lucy would always try and, like, find a way into whatever.
They were both terrible at times, but they were terrible. So like neither of them, with the with Homer and Marge, for the most part, Marge doesn't do much that's wrong. Homer's just an idiot.
Yeah.
So the fact that I'm not too sure about that kind of relationship, but with Lucy and Ricky, Lucy's a conniving little schemer with her things about trying to be famous and whatever. But Ricky's got his own issues. They're both
Ricky's kind of a domineering, controlling.
Yeah, he's right on the edge of that. There are times where he's well over the edge of it. But, like, there's, like, he has this kind of, like, he's got a temper in some ways, and he's kind of ridiculous in other ways. He's got his own big plans.
But he usually does step back from the edge.
Right, and she saves his bacon a lot, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're both really kind of, they're both funny characters in a situational comedy, which we kind of moved away from that in many modern stories where you've got the dopey dad and the neutral mom or vice versa, where you've got one character is the main character and everybody else is just sort of
they are both extremely vibrant characters in the same show that shared the spotlight.
I don't know that their relationship would hold up if you took those two characters and put them in a modern setting.
Yeah, I could see that.
But at the time, it did work.
Right, and I feel like their actual real-world relationship probably informed on that a lot, and you know, tumultuous and very loving relationship. Speaking of at the time it worked, here's something where I'm putting up, at the time worked, and now we cannot see it the same way. Bill and Claire Huxtable from The Cosby Show.
Aww.
That's on my negative. I can't watch that show. I can't.
See, now I'm going to... That's mostly because of the recent real world problems you have with Bill Cosby, right?
Yep.
And I don't know that it's fair to judge that sitcom from 20 years ago while it was happening, but to judge that sitcom based on the star.
I guess you can make the argument like the Huxtables didn't do that.
Yeah,
like,
no, I get it. I understand. Guess, but... And I think it's important to separate artists from art, I guess. But flat out, it's hard to watch that show. When he's saying something, everything that's maybe like a cute little double entendre from the couple then is creepy now. It's got these creepy undertones. And
I honestly think Cliff and Claire Huxtable's relationship always kind of gave me a little weird vibe.
Really?
To begin with, I was never quite comfortable with them, but it was always
okay. What is a doctor and a lawyer doing together?
Yeah.
Wasn't she like a lot younger than him anyway in that show?
I would assume.
I don't know. Yeah, which was also kind of a little weird.
Well, I just like Felicia Rashad, so I'm just assuming she was eternally young. Better. But speaking of creepy, for
and
me,
kooky?
Yes, exactly. I'm giving the award for best classic sitcom relationship to Morticia and Gomez Addams from the Addams Family. That they are the goat for me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely like one of those relationships where they would literally both go to the ends of the earth and do anything to just profess and show their love for one another.
The fact that they vocally express their love a lot on the show, there's an apocryphal tale possibly of they showed kids the show, I guess at the time, and they asked them what they liked the most about it, and they thought the kids were going to say something like, "Oh, all the creepiness, all the monsters and all the, you know, weird gags." But apparently they said that the mommy and the daddy loved each other so much. I hope that story is true.
I hope that's true
really
too.
Cool. And they do. They absolutely adored each other.
Absolutely.
He wasn't like, there was nothing weird about their relationship. It was odd. It was capital W weird. Mm-hmm. It was stay weird, stay true weird, but it felt right.
And there was no like, nothing ever sinister about nothing. There was no underlying, like, there was no ulterior motives to anything anybody did. It's not like with I Love Lucy, as much as I love that show, like Lucy trying to go and get into a show and like lying to Ricky in some way or another. Like that never happened with them. Like they were very trusting each other. And in fact, more partners than I think like any of the couples we've talked about are.
They come from old money.
They were open, generous, and loving with everyone they met. And they were always on equal footing with each other.
I don't know if we're kind of stumbling over the same thing about no ulterior motives. But yeah, like if you were to say strong, you know, evil woman, vampiric woman, and her subservient, adoring man, there's some creepiness that could creep into that. There's some weirdness that could go in there.
But that wasn't what it was.
They absolutely didn't have it. But something that does have it, this is close. Let's transition to... young adult romance, which is goddamn fueled by this kind of thing. So first off, Belle and the Beast from Beauty and the Beast. I love them. I love that relationship. I think it's really animated Disney Beauty and the Beast. It's a classic story. I think it's totally cool. And I think everybody who's got their like dime store liberal arts degree wants to reanalyze that story to make it about
Stockholm Syndrome.
Stockholm Syndrome, exactly. It's fine. It's a fairy tale. You can interpret it any way you want. But I give credit where it's due. Disney puts effort into making that relationship the least creepy version of that fairy tale it could be. Like, they show scenes where Belle's like, should I abandon the beast to die after he saved me? I'll put him somehow on the horse and bring him back. Like, she chooses to go back in there immediately after choosing to leave. So it's not like she's eventually grown to support her captor. She just made a choice. And I think we don't give that character credit for the choice they make. And I really think it's a cool relationship.
We may look at it and say, I wouldn't make that choice.
Yeah.
But Belle has her reasons for staying.
Right.
It's not like it's just, I've been clouded over by my time in captivity.
Yeah, and she doesn't even spend that much time there before she leaves anyway. Like, she's there for, like, one night before, like, she sees something she shouldn't, and he tells her leave, and, like, she goes back, like, to make sure...
Yeah, she leaves.
Yeah.
You could make it seem like he ordered her to leave. There's only reason. There's a lot of different ways of reading it, but I feel like you try too hard.
Yeah.
It's like trying to read Aladdin and making Jafar the hero, or Lion King and making Scar the hero. Like, these are fun, but don't be stupid here. And in the live-action version...
Well, he does make peace with the hyenas.
Yeah, I know. It's fun, but stupid. Fun, but stupid could be a tagline of the show. But, like, the live-action version of Beauty and the Beast, they even try harder to keep going into that fairy tale and digging out like gems of why she would feel close to the beast and why, like, making her the inventor. There's a lot of interesting things you could do with the story. It doesn't just have to be a gritty reverse evil kind of place.
CW drama.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a CW drama like Edward and Bella from Twilight, which are the crap garbage.
I was actually referencing Beauty and the Beast on the CW.
I don't care. I'm transitioning to my hatred of Bella and Edward from Twilight.
But he's so sparkly in the sunlight.
No.
I mean, talk about ulterior motives. You know, you got girl who's trying to escape her life combined with dude who wants to eat her.
Ancient dude who's preying on high school girls.
That's like super statutory at that point.
It's so creepy.
No, she's 18.
And the fact that the whole thing is...
Which makes that totally okay.
No, it doesn't.
There can be a 700-year age difference as long as she's at least 18.
Anyway,
maybe in Oregon. But the whole garbage fest that is this series... I've seen some of the movies, Riff Tracked, but I've seen the movies. And I've spoken to a lot of people who've read the books. And it's always this guilty pleasure of, it's like reading a romance novel. You don't think too much about it. But it's apparently really weird. And it gets even worse as the story progresses when you get your Mormon child bride. I'm sorry for Mormons, but apparently that's what happens. Maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, she gets her pregnant with a vampire baby who chews its way out of the womb. It's stupid. Who's looking at this? Team Jacob is what I'm saying. Team Jacob.
Obviously, yeah. Werewolves all the way.
If you have to go with anyone, Team Jacob.
Go with a guy that's at least your age.
Yes. I think he may have attacked her during the books at some point.
I don't remember.
I don't know. So I'm sorry if that was harmful. But, ugh, God, awful. Speaking of literary work, let's go to classic literature. Let's pretend like we're highbrow for a bit.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So number one, worst, most romantic couple in the history of classic literature. I think we all know who that is.
Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet.
Or as the kids know him today, Gnomeo and Juliet.
Yes.
Or Tromeo and Juliet.
As all the kids know it today, the hit film... Gnomeo and Juliet. Yes, absolutely true. It's true. It is true. All the kids, all of them, know this story as Gnomeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
Ask your children. Ask your children right now. Ask them. Pause and ask them. You know the story of Gnomeo and Juliet? They'll be like, yes.
Yeah.
And they'll go through every act.
If you don't have kids... Go make some.
Make some.
And
we'll wait.
Then ask them.
So yeah,
Romeo. Keep this on pause.
Yeah, Romeo and Juliet is stupid. It's the
We're back to Shakespeare now. Romeo and Juliet. Yes.
And it is actually. You know what? I've seen Gnomeo and Juliet, and it is better than Romeo
so much
and Juliet.
Better. You couldn't put on Romeo and Juliet these days.
Just to explain. Explain what Romeo and Juliet is. No, Romeo and Juliet is a great play. I'm not saying none of us are saying that it isn't a good
play. But it is the most toxic, vile relationship.
Insipid.
Actually, you're right. I don't think you can even say it's toxic and...
It's childish.
Yeah.
It is ridiculously childish.
There's no relationship to speak of.
They've knew each other for how long was it?
36 hours?
Yeah, something like that. Like a few days. Mm-hmm. And then they were both dead.
Literally hours after he's pining for another girl.
Yeah. It's... here's my question. Is that what we're supposed to get from this story? Because at the point when this was originally written, that wasn't so young, right?
No,
Yeah, so...
The age doesn't bother me so much as the
lack of experience.
The immaturity of the relationship.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with their age. You could be 25 and 30 these days and have that same relationship.
But even then, like, the fact that at the time, having one experience with a person might be all you ever got before you got married.
Well, yeah.
So I don't know if we're reinterpreting Shakespeare through modern lenses.
I think I'll argue our author's intent here. I definitely think that his thing was, you know, very much cautionary tale, and like not just about the families as something to warn about, but also about that young love aspect of things and how that can lead to trouble. And I'll argue that that's not that they might have had a relationship and it might not have gone anywhere, but. That's not the point, and I feel like I'm not ready to poo-poo on Romeo and Juliet entirely if I feel like that was the point of the story, was to be like, hey, this could turn out bad. Be careful. Don't just throw your life away.
A cautionary tale of teenage love.
I think you're adding a little too much depth to something that was literally the dick and fart jokes of its time. Like this is like a couple you're supposed to laugh at because all of Shakespeare is literally... Like I said, dick and fart jokes. It's all kind of meant to be this terrible relationship that everything terrible happens all around it, but we're still supposed to laugh at it.
I honestly think, they call it a tragedy, but I honestly think that if you were at the Globe Theater when this was being put on originally, the audience would have been laughing their butts off.
Really?
At these two idiots.
I think that there are funny parts in it, but I think it was a tragedy.
There, but...
And I think it wasn't played for lesson. I think he was like, no, this is a tragic romance. I don't think that it's just recent high school audiences that are going through this play and thinking, oh, Romeo and Juliet. I actually think for a long part of human history, this was a truly romantic tale, and it's just now it just does not hold water. That's my thing on it. I don't know. Let's go a little bit more recent. Let's go with Count of Monte Cristo. You like something about that Pope?
I would say the original Count of Monte Cristo before he got all the money, Edmond Dantes, and his relationship with Mercedes is kind of like on par with the Gomez and Morticia relationship, where they'd go to the end of the world for each other. They loved each other to death.
Mm-hmm.
And
literally to death. To
like literally she thought it was his death. Yeah. So like she was told he died, so that became the end of their relationship, not knowing that he was just, you know, being tortured in a prison somewhere in France. And
like you do.
You know, that happened.
Yeah.
They kind of had this perfect relationship until, you know, well after he comes back as the Count of Monte Cristo, you know, she begs and pleads with him not to kill her son.
What about that entire period when she meets the Count of Monte Cristo, doesn't realize who he is? What about not realizing who he is?
Like 20 years apart.
I think I could recognize somebody 20 years later. Even
also,
with,
didn't he have a beard?
No, well, there you go, beard. All right, I can see that as a good relationship. Not my thing. For me, this category is an ode to my wife, because she introduced me to my favorite classic literature relationship. That's Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy from Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, from Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, right?
No, just the Pride and Prejudice. I haven't seen the Zombies one yet, though I wish to. Yeah, I think they're really cute. I do think the story is... That, to me, is a relationship full of, like... misunderstandings and misconceptions and people with chips on their shoulders, pride and prejudice. And but still, like, you could see underneath all that how they do fit well with each other, how they are a good match. And when it happens, spoiler alert, I thought it was really cute. I really enjoyed that. On the other hand,
I have not seen or read Pride and Prejudice, and I'm very sorry, Frank, because I'm sure I would have opinions about this.
Oh, yes, I'm sure you would. But on the other hand, one we are probably all very aware of, Rhett Butler, who I keep misspelling as Brett Butler, not the actress, comedian. Rhett Butler and Scarlett O'Hara from Gone with the Wind are terrible.
Yeah, I agree with that one. Yeah. Doesn't he leave her when she doesn't have any money at one point? Like, just for that reason and that reason alone?
No, Rhett is a lot... He is a cad and a scoundrel, but he is far less a bad guy than Scarlett is. He doesn't leave her when she has no money. In fact, just the opposite. He leaves her after she repeatedly dismisses him, undermines their relationship. I don't understand where any of the... Other than them being physically attracted to each other, I don't get it. I don't understand what that relationship is. I don't know why people think it's romantic. I definitely think it's a good story, but they are toxic. They are really bad with each other. A little less highbrow now. Let's go into fantasy, the fantasy genre. This should be a one that produces a lot of good love stories and what have you. I think...
For instance, Lord of the Rings. You have the fantastic love story of...
Pippin and... Smeagol and the Ring?
No, well, there's that, but who's that guy? Aragorn? Faramir. Faramir and Eowyn.
I was going to say Pippin and Eowyn, but that's just me.
And yeah, so
Sam and Frodo. Let's be honest.
So, yeah, it should be the genre where a bunch of beautiful things come from. But instead, it's the genre that gives us Khal Drogo and Khaleesi from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with this one. It's like, as far as the television show goes, it's pretty... Yeah, wow, no, I'm not getting
the book
that.
Is, I would say, even worse, but no, it's as bad.
It's probably good that, you know, it ended tragically.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Here's what I don't get about it. Fine story, good, whatever. People react to them as if they are like couple goals. I've seen people call each other their stars and moon and whatever. And that's weird because it was not a relationship that started off on a good foot. That's the nicest way I could possibly say it.
Yeah.
The most charitable way of describing it would be as an arranged marriage.
Right.
An arranged political marriage.
And I totally get that Daenerys eventually falls for Khal Drogo because of his strength and how he eventually becomes gentle with her and what have you. I get it. I just don't get why that relationship that starts off really bleak goes through desperation and eventually ends in ridiculous, gruesome tragedy would be couple goals. The only explanation is the two actors from the show are hot. And I get that. Good for you. But really, maybe stop quoting this stuff to each other on Facebook, people.
I don't know. I see Momoa, but...
Yeah, I think she's
attractive.
She's
too.
Okay.
Yeah, she's no Momoa.
She's adorable.
She's no Jason Momoa, but she is
damn
attractive.
Damn sure she's no Momoa.
Because that would have been really interesting. Hey, someone out there edit a scene where Momoa is playing Khaleesi as well. And I don't know. Don't
just
do that.
Have him make out with himself.
God, you are every casual HBO Game of Thrones fan.
I mean, roll 30.
I love Khaleesi.
Oh, that's another thing. Naming your kid Khaleesi, it's or tattooing yourself with each other's character name. It's just the fan base. This is like a Rick and Morty thing. Was the fan base of these characters ruin it for me? On the other hand,
and we didn't even get Szechuan sauce out of this one.
Nope.
God, I don't even want to know what the secret sauce would be at McDonald's with this show.
Khal Drogo's horse sauce.
Oh, that's going to be sampled.
Oh, like what? Ew.
So for my favorite fantasy relationship, it's Wesley and Buttercup from The Princess Bride. I love them. They're adorable. They're cute. As you wish.
I'm sorry. No.
What don't you like about it? Do you not like him or do you...
He's dead inside.
No,
all.
It's not that I'm dead inside. It's just like I feel it's the Romeo and Juliet thing. Like they kind of have something that begins as a relationship. It's even at the beginning of it, it's very much he's a servant. He's her servant.
Yeah.
And then eventually he gets taken away or whatever. And like he comes back and the power dynamic has now been switched. And there's like this weird, almost revenge thing going on there for a little while before he reveals who he is.
Oh my God, this hit you at such a jaded point in your life.
I
can
tell. But honestly, tell me, why do they love each other?
They do. It's a fairy
tale. They're both pretty.
No, it's a fairy tale.
That's it.
Shut up. It's a fairy tale, and it's well built as a fairy tale. I fell through the beats. Like, you got to give credit to the actors and how they portray it, the direction. I'm talking mostly about the film.
Yeah.
And to me, they showed what was a secret love at first, her dawning that the little meanness she would do was like schoolyard thing, like when the girl likes you and pushes you. That is something we've all experienced. This is how I kind of like... emerging Frank thought of romance as a child. Not that I pushed people in the schoolyard. I got my ass pushed a lot. buy some hot chicks.
Yeah, but the
humble brag.
The nicest thing that he has to say about her is that she has perfect breasts.
That's not the nicest thing. That's just the thing you picked from there that was the nicest thing.
What's it better than, what does he say about her?
Now, he says an entire thing that I'm not going to pull out from my head. There's a whole speech.
Yeah, there's more than just...
There's more
than perfect breasts.
I literally cannot remember anything else
that
he says. That's
on you, sir. That is on you. Look it up. There's a lot of fun.
The amount of crap I remember from that movie.
Well, they're chiefly but, Andre the Giant lines.
mostly Mandy dead, but
yeah,
a lot of them are.
I mean,
really
there's just a lot more foundation to that relationship, though. Like we see it over the course of many years. That,
yeah,
like,
it's
it
not
grows,
Romeo
it builds,
and Juliet.
And they have this relationship from youth, and they grow into love each other, and then he gets kidnapped. You know, it's like not immediately why he's so mean to her. You know, just as revenge. You know,
yeah,
obviously
he does. I don't know. Yeah, that scene wasn't about taking a power. This wasn't 50 Shades of Grey in
medieval times.
Yeah, oh, come on. Come on, come on.
That's the new show at Medieval Times, by the way.
50 Shades of Grey,
all
right.
50 Shades of Grey at Medieval Times.
It's very, very titillating.
Don't ask what the Falcon does. Oh, God.
Speaking of Falcon, let's go into comics. Falcon does not show up in this list, but we have a bunch of lists from superhero comics that we wanted to discuss, which was, we were actually going to lead with this at one point, but let's talk about the poster child of comic couples.
Which would be Lois and Clark.
That's right.
Who got an entire show dedicated to just their relationship.
What is the name of that?
Lois and Clark.
I was going to say something funny, but you answered the right answer too quickly. All right, go on.
But yeah, Lois and Superman, like I think that's a great couple, like especially for the time it came out. Like Lois is just this like stubborn, almost point of being bullheaded kind of reporter, like anything to get the story, and she'll figure out what's going on with the bad guys, and then like inevitably kind of get into trouble, but then Superman will come in and like save the day, but he wouldn't have been there and he wouldn't have saved anything if Lois hadn't figured out what was going on
That's the cool part of this. I like that Al's pointing out is that it's not just damsel in distress. She gets into trouble and he saves her. She's actually she kind of forces him into exploring things more and more, as you would expect from a ace reporter.
Yep.
I think in the best stories, you're right. That is pretty cool.
And I think that's true for at least, maybe not all of the comic books, but I think that's true for all of the TV shows and cartoons. Like even way, way back with the original cartoons.
The Fleischer cartoons?
Yeah. Definitely that's the case.
There's an equality of the relationship too.
Yeah, they're partners again. Like what's really good about relationships that we've been discovering throughout all our lists is like the best couples are really the partners.
Yeah, like wonderful partners like Joker, like the Joker and Harley Quinn.
Adorable.
No, that's kind of abysmal actually.
Really?
Like, but you know, she loves her pudding.
I mean, yeah, but she loves him because he's abused her to the point of like not being able to live without him. I mean, it's
just like mom and dad.
I mean, it's
Pete may have gone too far over the edge.
I guess, yeah. But like what you said about Daenerys and Drogo is how I feel about Harley and Joker.
Oh my God, real world Harley Joker fans.
They are.
Who want to like couple like the.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really always gross.
It is because if you look at that relationship, it's like it's not something to aspire to. You don't want to be like a victim like that.
I don't
like
that
it's
at
just,
all. I'm gonna say one thing. I really liked Harley and Joker as a couple in how they are originally introduced in the Batman animated series. I understand he was very violent towards her, but it was because it was a cartoon. It was right on the edge of cartoon violence, where it felt to me, it felt like Abbott and Costello kind of thing, where one kind of took a beating, but it was always like a cartoonish thing.
Yeah.
So I was okay with it there. Everywhere else, really unsettled with it.
You got the feeling that it was cartoonish, and the Joker knew that he wasn't causing lasting harm.
Yeah, somebody. Yeah, like, exactly.
I think that was true until we got to like season four of that animated series, and you actually got how the relationship started. And there's that whole episode's kind of a hard watch now.
Mad Love?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
Might be it. Because like we're like, yeah, it is Mad Love. Like, and eventually he just pushes her out a window and it's like, oh my God. And like, it's not funny. Like she's injured and she's bleeding out of her mouth. And it's kind of like,
I think that's another thing the animated series did well though, is like, you think you're going to get these cartoony origins and then you get these really tragic ones. So maybe even then I was okay with it. But I guess at that point it stepped out of like, oh, I'm okay with this relationship. I'm like, oh, this is a good origin for a character. I don't know. It's problematic. I will definitely give you that. It's not... That's problematic, true, but just garbage is Oliver and Felicity from Arrow. Oliver and Felicity don't make any sense. They've joked since season one about Felicity kind of having a crush on Oliver. I think that's cute. I think it's neat. I get the idea. She's sort of like a tip of the hat for the audience of you're watching this buff actor doing salmon crawls or whatever the hell they're called.
Right.
That chin up thing, and she's reacting to it. It's sort of amusing and fun. That's fine. Making a romantic relationship where they did felt like definite ratings ploy.
Yeah, she worships him, and that's kind of where their relationship kind of starts from, isn't it? Like, he doesn't even really pay attention to her.
Yeah, that's kind of it, but also, like, eventually they become friends, and she is her own character, and then suddenly at the end of one season, he's like, I loved you, and I've always loved you. Psych! It was just a ploy to get some villain to drop their guard, and then I think the next season, he's like, no, double psych, I really do love you. And it just felt like fan service. And it was very weird, very unsettling.
Yeah.
And I don't think it did anything other than make that one character a little weaker. I don't know. I just did not enjoy it. It felt artificial.
That feels like all the stuff we just got done complaining about in all of like the comedy and situational comedy, like TV shows we just talked about.
Yeah.
Where like it's like this is... And that sounds like it should have been played for laughs. Like Joey should have walked in and like, I told you I could do romance.
Yeah.
A quick plug. If you do want to see some good Emerald Archer romance, check out the comic books and the ever-evolving relationship between Oliver Queen and the Black Canary.
Always cool. Yeah, that's very true.
Which they go through rough patches, but they almost always come back together, and they're always equals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that one. All right, so and there's Jean Grey and Scott Summers. They're everybody's least favorite couple for whatever reason. I don't know.
It's like the couple of kids that you knew that were a couple in elementary school, and they end up getting married, and it's just, ugh. Yeah. I hate you guys.
Plus, Scott's kind of like a dirtbag. I mean, I know we all complain, and we all say, like, oh, he's kind of a stick in the mud and so on and so forth, and he takes the weight of the world on his shoulders, even though no one asked him to. But more than that, Jean dies and immediately in any way.
Yeah.
Jean dies consistently. She does.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Scott will band-aid himself with whatever he can to remind himself of Jean. Like,
you know, because that relationship is so iconic for whatever reason.
Yeah.
They can't go too long without it. Mm-hmm. It's like the Nick and Nora of comic books. It's the Sam and Diane from Cheers in comedy. So like they keep going back and forth. I agree.
Yep. The man could have had Emma Frost, apparently. I don't know how he pulled that off.
That lasted pretty long. That lasted pretty long.
Like him and Emma went for a while, but and she brought out the absolute worst in Scott. He went from being a stick-in-the-mud Boy Scout to being a legit supervillain.
Yeah, a genocidal supervillain.
Yeah.
Scott Summers was right. Anyways, Magneto was right, we'll say that.
Magneto was Scott Summers.
Whoa! Gambit and Rogue.
Again, one of those like star-crossed relationships that I feel like everybody comes to love, but literally he can't touch her without getting an inch from death. He's just this epitome of Cajun romantic.
Yeah, he's machismo.
Like, he puts all of that towards her, at least at times, and it's just one of my favorite things to read about. Such like a perfect
frustration.
Relationship. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
He's also a scumbag thief that sells out his friends repeatedly.
In the comics, definitely, he's much more of a scumbag. I'm thinking of the 90s TV show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I really feel like that whole you can't touch each other thing was...
He was Don Juan in the TV show.
Oh, yeah, perfect censorship built in. You're like, oh, they can't do anything. They're fine.
Until, like, Mystique comes in and, you know, touches him as Rogue, and then he almost dies.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Like, Mystique
makes him think that...
Maybe it was Morph, actually. Rogue's...
Oh, God.
Oh, Evil Morph?
Wow.
Yeah, Evil Comeback Morph.
No, I don't think they would have let that fly in the 90s. No, but yeah, Mystique
kisses him on the cheek.
And so now he's like, oh, wow, whatever's going on, I can touch Rogue now. So he goes out and ends up finding the real Rogue and planting one on her.
And then she's like blowing stuff up for the rest of the episode. Like, that's one of my favorite things about that series.
Yep.
And you've got one more you'd like to talk about, Deadpool and Lady Death.
That relationship, too, is like another one I was like, can't be together because, you know, he infinitely comes back from almost any damage. And then, like, at one point when he almost stays dead, Thanos, who is also in love with Lady Death.
That's a weird love triangle.
Literally curses him to immortality.
All right, well, while we're on the topic of animation, you've got two you'd like to discuss, Al.
Yeah, I want to talk about Korra and Asami from Legend of Korra, because I really like this relationship because they both start out as romantic rivals and then eventually realize, like, oh, well, we're probably better off together than we are with anyone else.
Yeah, that makes sense. When you start off like rivals and you're like, you know what?
Holding hands, any walking port off in a storm.
No, I get it. Yeah, it's cool how it kind of evolves. I get it.
It's this very close, very intimate friendship that just evolves over like season after season. And I don't know, like, it was really, really nice to see randomly your ship sail. Like, I know that's stupid to say, to sit there and be like, man, I bet they'd be great together. They'll never do it. Nickelodeon would never have the cojones to pull that off. Oh, no, they did. Never mind. Okay.
Speaking of ship sailing, Sailor Moon and Tuxedo Mask.
That's a garbage relationship.
It really is so stupid.
It's like
he's a jerk.
He is.
He's a freaking jerk to her all the time.
I mean, it does eventually get better, and, like, I see why people love it, because it plays off that whole star-crossed Romeo and Juliet thing that, like, everybody romanticizes about. Yeah. But at the same time...
She can't do anything without him every episode. Like, she's gonna go fight the villain, and he shows up, and he doesn't do anything. He doesn't actually go and help out. He just says, I believe you can do it. Oh, well, that's all I needed. It was male validation. Now I can beat the bad guy.
Another thing, like, to sample. Great. Yeah, I disagree. I agree. It's terrible. Speaking of space, let's go to Space Adventure. My favorite. We only have two positive relationships in Space Adventures, which seems unfair. Zoe and Wash from Firefly. I think they're adorable.
They are.
Great couple.
I really
loving and supportive.
I like how they match together. I like how they kind of complement each other. Ace pilot and a competent soldier. And co-pilot or co-captain, I should say.
I wish she hadn't made Wash get rid of his mustache. I'll be honest.
No, disagree. Hard disagree.
With the two of them, there is no inevitable betrayal to curse.
Yes. Yeah. Now, on the other spectrum, side of the spectrum, Pope is from the
Mercer
Orville.
And Kelly Grayson. Yeah, that relationship that's just a dumpster fire where all you want to do is just watch it crash and burn.
I don't know about that. I'd call that a bad relationship, not a good one, but...
I'm saying it's a terrible relationship, but it's enjoyable. Just so much fun to watch.
All right. I guess so. We have only a few categories left. We've talked about the space adventures. Let's get into hard sci-fi. I know we didn't really think about hard sci-fi, like military sci-fi, when we originally talked about this, but I actually have the perfect couple and the most imperfect couple.
Okay.
Enlighten us, Frank.
Number 6 in Gaius Baltar from Battlestar Galactica. Perfect couple. I love them. If we're allowing dysfunctional couples that are terrible and awful and bad idea as part of good, then they are the best terrible couple I can imagine.
I'm inclined to agree.
They are so terrible. Humans and Cylons both risked extinction because of their romance. Love it.
I loved watching them, and despite the fact of hating them, and yet still wanted them to get together at the end, which is even weirder.
Yeah.
Which is like, odd. I hate both of you, but come on, work out your relationship issues before
Absolutely.
You die, I guess.
Absolutely. On the other side of that is Dwala and Lee from Battlestar Galactica. We're stupid. That was like a sitcom rating thing. We're like, oh, we got to do something with these characters.
With Fat Lee.
Yeah, oh, Fat Lee. Fat Lee from Battlestar Galactica. They were just, I know if people haven't seen it, they're out. They're completely out. But it's such a weird, bad couple.
It doesn't make any sense. And he's kind of awful, and she's like a wet rag. And it's just, it's not a relationship. It's weird.
One more I just thought of in sci-fi. The Doctor and River Song.
Positive or negative?
Depending on which direction in time you're watching the relationship, either or.
Yes and no. Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree. One of the most famous IPs of all time, Star Wars.
Aha.
So for me, the power couple is Han and Leia.
Of course.
I love them. Original trilogy, Han and Leia. I love how their will they, won't they in Empire, their kind of tension in New Hope, and how it evolves in Return. I love it.
But he's so terrible. Like, he's such a flighty person. Like I agree wanting to love that relationship. It's just, like, I don't feel like there's anything great about the relationship because she's a rock. Like, she's always firm in what she's doing, very resolute. And then he's barely there.
I disagree. I think we're boiling Han down to, like, a stereotype of his character.
Boil Han down.
I'm not sure why.
Good idea.
I don't know why Carl Drogo showed up. But, sorry. But, yeah, the... So for me, like, he keeps threatening to leave, that he doesn't care, whatever, but he's always there. He's there in New Hope to pull them out. He's there in Empire just trying to save Luke and trying to hold this thing together. Like, he's more involved than he admits to being. And yeah, he's mostly there because he loves these people. But that's probably that's the best reason to be in a rebellion, aside from political reasons, I guess. I don't know. I think he's much more
invested. Genocidal Empire is afterthought.
I would definitely agree, Frank, because I feel like he does stick around, and to his detriment, because the reason why things go so bad with Jabba is because he stays with the rebels and helps them out.
Right.
And also, like,
Jabba was going to do that anyway.
Well, the reason he gets caught. The reason he gets caught. That's one of the things that's most bothersome to me about the new trilogy is that that relationship between Han and Leia has become taxed and scarred, and I really, it hurts. But one of my least favorite relationships in Star Wars would be Rose and Finn. I don't like it. I don't buy it yet. It's too new, yeah?
I still say we're not supposed to. Again, when I watched the end of that film, when she kisses him and he gives nothing back.
You don't think
he, I think it's amazing. It's like, yes, you don't get to have love. Not every love is requited.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he doesn't love you and he never will.
Wow. That's interesting.
I mean, there's also nothing to it yet, though, because we had like 30 seconds in the movie, yeah, and then she passes out and you're like, is she dead?
Fair enough.
She's not dead yet.
Fair enough. I don't know where I'm going to go with Rose and Finn. Damn, Al, that was dark. I don't know where we're going to go with Rose and Finn yet. In that case, worst relationship.
3PO and R2.
No, I could see it.
They're dying to have a baby. Let's be real here.
That's pretty abusive, though. By the way, what do you think BB-8 is?
That's true. Never mind. You're right.
That's ridiculous. But no, the actual worst relationship, I think, is pretty clear. Padme and Anakin from Star Wars.
Was there a relationship?
We're meant to believe.
I just kind of saw two cardboard cutouts mashing up against each other.
We were meant to believe that this 20-year-old woman and this 5-year-old boy eventually fall in love with each other for reasons, because he's so compelling with his man braid.
And this really weird sort of almost mind comp level of, like, political views that he brings up in conversations in the second movie.
Does he?
Yeah, like, he just randomly brings up totalitarianism.
Yeah, he does.
As a viable form of government.
It's like,
so bad.
Like, well, we need to keep talking until some, like, people don't always agree. Like, well, someone should make them
when
agree.
Your character dies from a broken heart, that's like the epitome of this relationship was written into existence.
Yep.
But it was, I mean, I thought it was so touching. The way she stood there and supported him when he was tearfully explaining how he committed genocide on the sand people.
Oh, no.
I killed the women and the children. It's like, oh, honey, it's okay. Like, yeah, really?
We've all had bad days at work.
No. It's just sand people. They don't count.
Don't let that second word fool you. They're not people.
Yeah.
God, there's just so much. So much to hate about that relationship.
Do they look like us? I mean, maybe we never see underneath their head coverings.
Oh my God.
But it doesn't matter if you don't know.
Well, from all of us here at Nonproductive to all of you out there in Radioland, we hope you have a wonderful Valentine's Day, and we hope you get a chance to see underneath someone's head covering to determine whether or not they're a person worthy of love. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Drogo, stop talking.
This has been a Nonproductive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Nonproductive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.